Good evening. We have one brief announcement. There'll be a meeting of the Evangelism Committee directly after the service. And what we wish to do there is just set a schedule and put a name to the various functions so that we know that we're ready to go when that day comes on the 19th. So without further ado, we're going to look at Joshua. Kind of sad to leave the series because he's a unique character in the Bible. His very name means Yahweh is salvation. And we find him in Numbers 11:28 as a servant to Moses from his youth. So he spent a lot of time apprenticed to Moses. Then, as leader of the nation. And you will notice in the account of Joshua that unlike many other subsequent kings, there are no sins documented of Joshua where he disobeyed the law of God. So there, he even is different than David, who was beloved of God, but did have his shortcomings. Now, as people near the end of their lives, they like to tie up loose ends. They like to put things in order. We remember that Hezekiah was told that set your house in order, for you shall die and not live. I think that probably most of us here, or certainly some of us, have had the experience of an older relative calling us or perhaps writing us and saying, I wish you'd come and see me because there is some things that I want to give you or some things I want to tell you. I was visiting a member of my family years ago, and he was getting along in years, and I was getting ready to go. He always had to take me out in the yard by my car and say one more thing. And he took me out, and he was telling me some very personal family information that was of great interest to him. And when I was ready to leave, he told me, Ward, he said, I'm losing it, and I can feel it going, and I wanted to tell you this. And not long after that, he was in the hospital, and my dad went up to see him, and my dad told me sometimes he was talking to him, my father, and sometimes he was talking to my grandfather, my father's father, and then sometimes he was talking to me. And my dad, being very understanding of folks toward the end, answered for all of us. But it's quite true that he was losing it, and he could feel it go. And toward the end there were some things he wanted to tell me that he thought he might not be able to say or remember subsequently. So in our text, Joshua is nearing the end of his life, and much of the promised land has been subdued, but there are still nations remaining to be conquered. And so if we start in chapter 23, and we're not going to try to read absolutely everything, and we might skip around just a little, but it came about after many days when the Lord had given rest to Israel from all their enemies on every side, and Joshua was old, advanced in years, that Joshua called for all Israel, for their elders and their heads and their judges and their officers, and said to them, I'm old, advanced in years. And you have seen all that the Lord your God has done to all these nations because of you, for the Lord your God is he who has been fighting for you. See, I have apportioned to you these nations which remain as an inheritance for your tribes, with all the nations which I have cut off from the Jordan even to the great sea toward the setting of the sun. The Lord your God, he will thrust them out before you and drive them from before you, and you will possess their land, just as the Lord your God promised you. Be very firm then to keep and do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, so you may not turn aside from it to the right hand or to the left. And so, Israel is at rest. Now that doesn't mean they have totally conquered the land, but it does mean that while they might not be ready at that time to fight the remaining nations, those nations are not very eager to come out and fight them. So there is rest. And so Joshua, being in a leadership position, wants to remind Israel of what God has done for them in the past, what he will do for them in the future, and what the nation needs to do in order to retain this blessing of God and escape punishment for disobedience. And so he's calling the leaders and the nation. He wants to tie up these loose ends. Now, the text shows two speeches, but we're going to summarize them due to lack of time and treat them as one. And so he talks to them about the nations remaining. In verse 7, so you will not associate with these nations, these which remain among you, or mention the name of their gods, or make anyone swear by them, or serve them, or bow down to them. But you are to cling to the Lord your God as you have done to this day, for the Lord has driven out great and strong nations from before you, and as for you, no man has stood before you to this day. One of your men puts to flight 1,000, for the Lord your God is he who fights for you, just as he promised. So take diligent heed to yourself to love the Lord your God. For if you ever go back and cling to the rest of these nations, these which remain among you, and intermarry with them, so that you associate with them, and they with you, know with certainty that the Lord your God will not continue to drive these nations out from before you, but they will be a snare and a trap to you, and a whip on your side and thorns in your eyes, until you perish from off this good land which the Lord your God has given you. And so, the nations remaining, he reminds them that the Lord has fought for them and given them this land. And he has apportioned the land out to the 12 tribes that yet remains where these other nations are living. Now, we see the division of the land start in Joshua 14:6, and the last word we hear is Joshua's portion in 24:30. So it starts with Caleb. It ends with Joshua. So the faithful spies who wished to go in and take the land while the rest of the nation trembled and waited at the Jordan, they have been given what was promised. But the land itself is a gift from God, and the land belongs to God. And if God can give them the land, God can also take it back. Thus, Israel is to keep the law of Moses, and that means their behavior toward the remaining nations has to be regulated by the law. So Joshua speaks of separation. I want you to keep separate, as the various customs of the nations in the land do not agree at all with the law of Moses. Recent research, historical and archaeological, shows that some of the customs of these nations that were there, probably the most egregious custom is that they would burn babies to the god of Molech, which was a terrible, terrible thing, but there was many others. So, first and foremost, they're not to have anything to do with the gods of the nations still in the land. And so we see it kind of in steps from serious to very serious. So the names of these gods are not to find their way into conversation. They are not to swear by them. Now, in all polite society, there are things we don't speak of. And different societies have different things that they don't speak of. The things that are deemed outside the pale of normal conversation. So, if a woman is a little heavy, you don't ask her when she's due, not unless you're crazy. There are things you don't say. So, we might say, it's not nice to speak of such things, or not polite, not acceptable. So, the advice Joshua is giving there is, this is the category for the various gods of the nations. you're not going to mention those names. But there's more. The names are not to be mentioned, and if it's necessary to take an oath or make a contract, no one's ever to be required to swear by those gods. They had contracts in ancient times. You know, we're not the first people to have contracts. They might have been on clay tables, but there were contracts. And so, there would be contracts, including wedding contracts. Okay. Bride price might be so many goats and so many sheep and so many pieces of silver and so forth. But if they agree and swore by something, that's where you could begin to see some of the local gods creep in. So certain results then are going to come. He says, I don't want you to associate. Don't go back and cling to the rest of the nations. So think of in-laws who serve different gods, wives or husbands who serve different gods, children brought up in confusion regarding what's proper. Now, Israel is never to bow down to these gods and serve them. The nation is to cling to the Lord, love the Lord, serve the Lord. And we see here in verse 8, you are to cling to the Lord. The idea of clinging is close association. They're to bond with the Lord. So if I was putting a modern spin on it, I would say Gorilla glue yourself to the Lord, or epoxy glue yourself to the Lord. Hang on and don't let go. And they're strongly admonished not to cling to the remaining nations. There's not to be any bonds. And there's many kinds of bonds. You have business contracts, you have marriage contracts. Any bonds like this will cause Israel to associate with these various nations over a period of time. And with that continued association, the customs of those nations, including the gods worshipped by them, will find its way into Israel. And in that case, the Lord says, I'm not going to continue to drive them out. The remaining nations are going to be a cause for the nation to sin and then be punished. And it's described as a snare and a trap for the nation to lead them into sin, a whip on the side or thorns in their eyes to punish them. Very graphic and colorful descriptions of what? Things you do not want to happen to you. We don't want this. Joshua reminds the people that he will no longer be there to lead them. During this time, they're going to have to obey the Lord. And he also reminds them the promises of the Lord have come true during his life and leadership while the nation obeyed. Now, just as the promises are real and true, the punishments are real and true. Punishments, by the way, are found in Deuteronomy chapter 31 and 32, where the Lord details if they do not obey the things that is going to happen to them. So as we start chapter 24, we begin to see a review of history. So to reinforce his point, Joshua takes them back in time. So he calls for the elders and their heads and judges, and he says to all the people, thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, from ancient times your father lived beyond the river, and that would be, of course, back when Terah and all of them were worshiping other gods along the river, the Euphrates. Namely, Terah, the father of Abraham, the father of Nahor, and they served other gods. So he reminds them. And I took your father Abraham from beyond the river and led him through all the land of Canaan and multiplied his descendants and gave him Isaac. And to Isaac I gave Jacob and Esau, and to Esau I gave Mount Seir to possess it, but Jacob and his sons went down to Egypt. Then I sent Moses and Aaron, and I plagued Egypt by what I did in its midst, and afterwards I brought you out. I brought your fathers out of Egypt, and you came to the sea, and Egypt pursued your fathers with chariots and horsemen to the Red Sea. But when they cried out to the Lord, he put darkness between you and the Egyptians and brought the sea upon them and covered them. And your own eyes saw what I did in Egypt, and you lived in the wilderness for a long time. Then I brought you into the land of the Amorites, who lived beyond the Jordan, and they fought with you, and I gave them into your hand, and you took possession of their land when I destroyed them before you. And Balak, son of Zippor, king of Moab, arose and fought against Israel, and he sent and summoned Balaam, the son of Beor, to curse you. But I was not willing to listen to Balaam, so he had to bless you, and I delivered you from his hand. You crossed Jordan, came to Jericho. The citizens of Jericho fought against you, and the Amorite and the Perizzite, the Canaanite, Hittite, Girgashite, Hevite, Jebusite. Thus I gave them into your hand. Then I sent a hornet before you, and I drove out two kings of the Amorites from before you, but not by your sword or your bow. I gave you a land on which you had not labored, and cities which you had not built, and you lived in them, and you are eating of vineyards and olive groves, which you did not plant. So, Joshua is going over history. He uses three main points. First is the nation before serving God. Second is the nation after being chosen by God and serving God. And third would be the nation in the future with a choice of serving God or not. So he reminds Israel from whence the nation came. Terah, the father of Abraham, served different gods, but God took Abraham from that place beyond the Euphrates and gave him Canaan. And the nation went down into Egypt, and God brought them out with a mighty hand, but they lived in the wilderness a long time. They are reminded what happened when they came to the Promised Land. First, there were military campaigns. The Amorites were destroyed before Israel. Then Balak, the king of Moab, decided a spiritual force has got to be brought to bear. He said, military force doesn't seem to do it. So he sent messengers to Balaam, son of Beor, at Pethor, which is near the river in the land of the sons of his people, to call him, saying, behold, a people came out of Egypt. Behold, they cover the surface of the land, and they're living opposite me. Now, therefore, please come and curse this people for me, since they are too mighty for me. Perhaps I may be able to defeat them and drive them out of the land. For I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed. So he brought in Balaam, the son of Beor, to curse Israel. He didn't believe a conventional military campaign would succeed. And actually, he took him to look at the people, and instead of cursing, Balaam is blessing them. And he says, oh, this is terrible. I didn't want you to do that. Let's go to a different place on a different mountain, and maybe if we go to a different place and you see a different bunch, you could curse them there. And so he brought him, and he blessed him again. He said, what are you doing? This is not why I brought you out here. We got to go to another place. So he took them yet to another place, and he took them to like seven different places. And Balaam had to go home with no reward at all whatsoever because he blessed them every time. The Lord did not permit him to curse. And so the nation crossed Jordan and took Jericho along with many other cities. And this meant they enjoyed the fruits of the labor of those nations, vineyards, olive groves. Olive groves last a long time. Vineyards, the same if you keep them trimmed. They can last for many, many years. So starting in 24:15, we'll start in 24:14, he's saying, now therefore fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. If it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourself today whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served, which were beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. So here, he's giving them a choice. Now, they knew, because he had just told them, that Abraham was taken away from those gods up by the Euphrates, and God took him up to Canaan and gave him an inheritance there. The gods that they served there did not do that. They knew that the gods of the Egyptians were helpless in front of the Lord and helpless in front of the plagues. They also knew that the gods of the Amorites had not saved them. So essentially, Joshua is telling them, now, here are these gods which couldn't help the people who served them, and here is our God who helped you and kept every single promise he made. Now, you better decide who you're going to serve. Which is it going to be? And he also advises them to put away the gods which their fathers served and the gods they learned about in Egypt or even in the Amorites. And we know there's little hints in the scriptures here and there that there was some idols, some images that came up with the children of Israel even when they were coming out of Egypt. And even in the story of Rachel and Leah, we have the household gods which were hid in the furniture on the camel, and she was sitting on them lest her father dig them out and find them and accuse her of stealing them, which she had. So we know there's some lingering things, because there's enough in the scriptures to tell us. And so he says, make up your mind. What are you going to do? What do you want to do? The people answered and said, far be it from us that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. For the Lord our God is he who brought us and our fathers up out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, and who did these great signs in our sight and preserved us through all the way in which we went and among all the peoples through whose midst we passed. And the Lord drove out from before us all the peoples, even the Amorites who lived in the land. We also will serve the Lord, for he is our God. Now, we have Joshua kind of pressing the people or testing them. He's saying, you will not be able to serve the Lord, for he is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgressions or your sins. If you forsake the Lord and serve foreign gods, he will turn and do you harm and consume you after he has done good to you. Actually, this verse 20 is a summary of the entire book of Judges. If you took this verse and then you read Judges, you could say, there it is in Reader's Digest form. And the people said to Joshua, no, but we will serve the Lord. So he said, are you sure? They said, yes, we're sure. Joshua said to the people, you are witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen for yourself the Lord to serve. And they said, we are witnesses. And he says again, put away the foreign gods which are in your midst and incline your hearts to the Lord, the God of Israel. So the people promise then, they make a vow which was taken very seriously then. They remember the deliverance from Egypt and the great signs that were performed with the help of the Lord. But he challenges them. He said, I don't think you can do it. Oh, yes, we can, they said. We will. We will. You know, that reminds me of Jesus talking to his disciples, and he says to them, you better count the cost. No man builds a tower unless he sits down first and figures out his materials and knows he can finish. No king goes to war unless he can count up his troops and he's able to meet the opposing king. Otherwise, he sends for terms while the other king is still far away. You better think about it. Count the cost. So the people were sure. So once a decision is made, it says in verse 26, Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God, and he took a large stone and set it up there under the oak that was by the sanctuary of the Lord. And Joshua said to all the people, "Behold, this stone shall be for a witness against us, for it has heard all the words of the Lord which he spoke to us, and thus it shall be for a witness against you, so that you do not deny your God." So he set up a memorial, a large stone under the oak tree by the sanctuary, and he said it was there when they promised to obey the Lord, and it was for a witness. And this, by the way, is memorial number seven. Seven, the number of completion or the number of perfection. And it's the last memorial set up by Joshua, marks the end of his leadership. And so the land itself was teaching Israel to remember. And so if we go to memorial number one, we have 12 stones taken from the riverbed of Jordan. The nation crossed over, showing God helped them get across the river. But then sin came into the camp, and there was problems. And the nation was punished because there was sin in the camp. Because Achan took spoil out of Jericho, which he was not supposed to take. And so we have a great heap of stones raised up over him. And that would be a reminder of what can happen when you let sin into the camp. Now, once the sin was taken care of, then they were able to go and take Ai, and we find a great heap of stones raised over the king of Ai at the entrance of the city gate. Here's a reminder of the Lord's blessing again after sin is taken care of. Took care of the issue, took care of the problem. There's an altar of stones on Mount Ebal with a copy of the law of Moses written on the stone. That's Joshua 8:32. Then we have five kings who attacked Gibeon, and they were buried at the mouth of a cave. Large stones then they threw in the cave, and large stones were put over the cave. Many of those, you see a notation, and they are here to this day. Then we have the unused altar, which we didn't really have time to speak about, but that was in Joshua chapter 22, 26 or 28. And then finally, we have the large stone set up by the oak tree to memorialize the covenant at the end of his ministry. So he's setting things in order. He says, I want you to look back. I want you to think about what has happened in the past. I want you to think about where you are today. You know, it makes me think of the stone set up that they called Ebenezer, meaning hitherto the Lord has helped us. And so he says, you're going into the future, but you're going without me. I won't be there. I won't be there. So, you know, when my father was alive, he was something of the patriarch of the family, and people talked to him about his problems, and he took care, and he always was a fountain of good advice and wisdom, but he passed away, and we lost him. So now I'm the old man of the family, believe it or not. And you know, I would hope that in some form or fashion I could live up to his stature, but it's a lifetime's worth of work. So Joshua then died and was buried in his inheritance. They buried him in the territory of his inheritance, Timnath-Serah, which is in the hill country of Ephraim on the north of Mount Gaash. Each of us here tonight has a testimony, whether we know it or not, whether we like it or not, whether we wish it so or not, each of us have one. And our testimony consists of many things: what we have done in our lives, or in some cases, what we have refrained from doing, who we have loved, how we have shown that love, who's loved us, what people know about us. Some of us are very open and we'll tell anything. Some of us are closed up and tell very little. So some of us people know much about, some little. The things people say about us. And then finally, as we pass from this life, as we all will, what is remembered about us? So when you're gone, do you want someone to say you should always speak good of the dead? He's dead, good. Maybe not. So, what do we think about what people do in their life? If we're looking for perhaps a secular viewpoint, we could say, the evil that men do lives after them. The good is off interred with their bones. Julius Caesar, Act 3, Scene 2. Well, this was not the case with Joshua. Because in verse 31 it says, Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders who survived Joshua, and known all the deeds of the Lord which he had done for Israel. So the elders that knew him kept Israel on the right path. They said, we're going to do what Joshua would have wanted us to do. And he died and was buried in his own inheritance, which is another testimony to the faithfulness of God. The bones of Joseph were buried in Shechem, on land that Jacob bought. But Joshua did not have to buy land from the local nations for a burying place. We remember Abraham approaching the sons of Heth when his wife died and said, I'm a sojourner here. I don't have any place to bury my dead out of my sight. And they said, well, we give you anything. You're a mighty prince. We'll give you anything you want. And he said, no, I'll buy it for the full amount. And so he bought a field and a cave at the end of it for a rather exorbitant amount, but there was the land at that time was not his. He was a sojourner there. But Joshua was buried in his own inheritance because God drove the nations out ahead of him. I would, if I had a wish for the people here, for everyone listening tonight, my wish would be that you could have a similar testimony to Joshua. And even after you were gone, they could say, this person didn't turn to the right hand, they didn't turn to the left. They did what was right. And they followed the Lord all the days of their life. I don't know what could be better than that.